المسير. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الأمين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله. والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد وعلى
وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. أما بعد، فقد قال الله الحكيم في كتابه المجيد، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم: ولا تركنوا إلى الذين ظلموا فتمسكم النار ما لكم من دون الله من أولياء ثم لا تنصرون. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is saying in this ayat that I have been reciting for you the last few days that do not incline yourself. Do not be inclined. Do not go near those who do good. Because the fire of hell and Jahannam will pull you towards it. Will pull you towards it. And you will not have Allah as your helper. And if you don't have Allah as your helper, then you have no one as your helper. So here, Allah is explaining about zulm and emphasizing the fact that He does not want the believers to even incline themselves towards zulm. Or even those who do them. Don't even have a soft heart or a soft point in your heart for them. To those who do them. If you do that, two things will happen. One is that the fire of hell will pull you towards it. And the second one is that you will not have Allah as your helper. So, my friends, we have been discussing about zulm and about adl and having an understanding of what zulm is. And I've explained to you why people do zulm yesterday. Zulm is really done, or zulm is the expression of weakness and being inferior. When someone is weak, when someone is inferior, then he does dhulm in order to hide his inferiority from other people. Dhulm is done to hide your weakness from other people, that others don't know about the dhulm or the weakness that you have. That's why injustice is done. That's where it emanates from. And whatever injustice happens, you can look into it and see it. And here we see that Allah is saying that there are two things that happen when you do dhulm. One is that when you do dhulm, the fire of hell is going to pull you towards it. And the second thing that happens is that Allah will not be your helper. When he says this, then he says, "Thumma la tunsarun." Here, when he says "thumma," it means that when you don't have Allah as your helper, then he says, then no one is your helper. Then you have no help at all. So, one of the things that happens is this. If you stay away from zalim and zulm and injustice, then Allah will be your helper. If you go towards the zalim and incline towards him, then Allah will not be your helper. So from here we understood who is being helped by Allah and who is not being helped by Allah. Those who incline themselves towards those who do injustice, Allah is saying, if you see them looking for help from those who are zalim and those who are tyrant and unjust, know that Allah is not their help. And if they do not go there, if they don't go to those who are zalim, then it means that Allah is their help. My friends, if you want to know who Allah is helping, then see on whose door they are at. If you see them at the door of the tyrant, then you know that this person is not being helped by Allah. And if you go under him, then you also fall under the same category. This is why a lot of times it is hard to understand that how can you associate with a zalim and not with a zulm. This is a differentiation that even mu'mineen make. And they say, well, he does this to others, but he hasn't done anything to us. His speeches are good. And then you wonder, wait a minute. If he is inclined towards those who are zalim, if anyone is inclined towards those who are zalim, then it means that Allah is not their helper. If you go with them, then you are also losing the help of Allah. And if Allah is not your helper, you have no helpers. And what that means is that, you see, my brothers, understand this, if we can see this ideology and see who has this ideology in their minds, then you would know that truly, if you want to make a stand for Islam and if you want to do something right, then Allah is saying, you need Allah's help. You cannot do it without Allah's help. Well, I want you to see this. What does it mean? Right at the beginning, you know, I mean, I can give you many examples, but let me give you that example that stands out the most. You know, in the Battle of Khaybar, the achievement or the feat that Imam Ali did was such that everyone who was watching it was amazed. They were amazed. I mean, they were amazed because of the fact that, you know, a door that is opened by so many people is so big and so heavy. How can one man take it off its hinges and throw it away? I mean, it was a feat that when everyone saw this, when Muslims, they all saw it, they all seen it, and you see in history books, they were just like looking at it and they are asking each other, did you just see what Ali did? I mean, did you just see what Ali did? And now all the praise was on Ali. And now I want you to understand this. Everyone was looking at Ali. It was an achievement that truly anyone could take. I mean, anyone, if they had done it, you see, would have had the premises to build upon it and make themselves a great name for themselves. I mean, we do small achievements. If we write a book, then right away we are known as Allah. Isn't that right? I mean, look at it. This is how it is. If you do one thing, then your name is everywhere. If you do one good thing, you see, you take the credit for it and you build yourself on top of that. And these things that we do are so menial and so small, I mean so little, that when you look at it and see it in comparison to what Imam Ali had done, really it's nothing. In fact, when we boast about what we have done, people laugh at us. But when you see that Imam Ali, what he had done, people were envious. They were just watching. They said, this is not humanly possible. It cannot be. It was such an easy chance for Imam Ali to take advantage and say, now, do you believe in me? Now, do you recognize me as Imam? He is Imam, he won't be lying. He won't be saying any untruth. He will say, now do you believe in me? Now do you know why I am the Imam? But you see, when they all were praising Imam Ali and making him look great and making him say that he is superhuman, Imam Ali said, wait a minute. مَا خَلَعْتُ بَعْمَا يَوْمَ خَيْبَرْ بِالْقُوَّةِ جِسْمَانِيَّةِ بَلْ بِالْقُوَّةِ رَبَّانِيَّةِ He said, I did not do this with my own strength. This is Allah's strength that is the reason I did it. So don't praise me, praise Allah. He is the one who did it. I was just the means. My brothers, understand this. We all know this. Now I want you to understand what happens. What is the wisdom? I mean, why did Imam Ali have to give this clarification? Why did he have to say this? You know, some people say, well, you know, it's a matter of nafs, you know. The nafs, you know, you have to really make sure that your nafs is in your control. I mean, we are talking about someone who's nafs and Muhammad. What possible avenue does his nafs have over him? Understand why he did this, my brothers and friends. You see, this clarification was needed. Because if he did not give this clarification, he knew that, you know, these people of Khaybar, it's not that they are gone forever. They will come back again. The enemies of Allah will come back again. They will build Khaybar again. They will build their army again. They will again challenge the Muslims. And then everyone will say, listen, it was Ali. If Ali had said, I did it, then they'll say, but that time we had Ali. Now we don't have Ali. You see, Muslims will not have hope in their own self. They will become hopeless. Ali was there, so he did it. He defeated Khaybar. He destroyed Khaybar. But now who's going to do it? Ali's not here anymore. Ali is not here anymore. So there, Allah, He wanted to teach us that then when Khaybar was built, it was Allah's help that did it, not Ali's. And He is trying to teach us from that point onwards that those people of Khaybar will rise up again. They will build a Khaybar again. They will challenge the Muslims again. And even then, when they are built, they will be destroyed again. But not with your help, but with Allah's help. This is so that Muslims can have this hope in their heart that if ever Khaybar is built again, that which it is, and those people who were in Khaybar are again alive today, and they have built a Khaybar for themselves, and they are challenging the Muslims, they also, Allah wants to teach us that have this hope in your heart that you need to just do what Imam Ali did and rise for Allah's cause and know that it's Allah's help that's going to destroy them. You are not going to hurt them. You cannot do anything for them. It is Allah who is going to destroy them. You see, this, my brothers and sisters, understand how the Imams have taught us. And how they have made it such that we understand that this zulm that happens, how we have to interact with that and how we have to get rid of that. What does it mean? Imam, when you write for the truth, when you write for the truth and you write for Islam, you will see that there will be zulm on you. There is no doubt about it, and it happened to all the Imams. They were madhloom. Madhloom is not the Urdu mazloom, it's the Arabic mazloom. The Urdu mazloom means the one who can't do anything. In other words, we call him bichara. This is the Urdu mazloom. The Arabic mazloom means the one who, when he rises up, is oppressed because of his stand. In other words, he is not running away, he is not hiding, he is not sitting down. He is mazloom because he is standing up. That's the meaning that we're talking. So when we say mazloom, I don't want anyone to get the idea that the Imams, you know, had, you know, weren't doing anything. They did not get themselves involved in anything, and hence they were hiding in their house, reading their tasbih, and saying, you know, inshallah, we don't do anything outside. Oh, that's not the case, my brothers. Imams were mazloom, meaning Imams made a stand, and the zalim knew this, and knowingly did zulm on them and did injustice on them. This is the meaning of mazloom. So now, when you see they did zulm, there was zulm on them and they became mazloom, there's something amazing that I want you to understand today. Something amazing that they showed us and they did. Really. And you know, really, I want to make this clear to you as to how they gave us an ideology of what it means to be mazloom and how they used their mazloomiyyah for their own advantage and the advantage of Islam. Salawat ala Muhammad wa
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
You know, when we speak about the means of communication, when you have a word to say, when you want to say something of the truth, you have a word to say. You feel you have the truth, then you want to transfer it to others. So obviously there are different ways that you use. The different ways that you use. You can speak, and through speeches you reach out. You can write, and through books you give this to others. You can now have audio, and like this is an audio recorder. It is recording in audio. And you can use that to give the message to others. You can use TV. That is giving the message to others. You can use the internet. Nowadays you see internet is the major means of communication between people. In the world you see there are so many ways, different ways of giving the message. Right? Like for example, the Imams made a way that was the minbar. The minbar was the way to give the message to the people. They established the majlis of Imam Hussein. The majlis was Azadari of Ahlul Bayt. And it was known that they asked the people to come in clothes of mourning, like you would come and visit someone in whose house a death has occurred. How you would come there, with what face, with what attitude, the same way you come to the majlis. Right? You come to the majlis in that way. And this has been mentioned because this was a way of transferring that ideology, that mission that was established in Karbala to the people. And obviously, this is something that even when you see, it has made us and revived us and recharged us over and over again every year and every year now. In fact, you see, every movement that happened, and every movement that happens, and every uprising that takes place for the right cause and for Islam, all gratitude to Ashura and to the Majlis of Imam Hussain. I mean, this is the reason why we see that our late leader Imam Khomeini said, Ma harche darin az Ashura darin. Whatever we have is from Ashura. These Majlis, this environment that has been created, it creates that love, and truly, the way it has been created, you see, this is a movement, this is a movement not based on anger, not based on happiness, not based on resentment. This is a movement that's based on grief. You see, people can get angry at anger. Resentment is something that's looked down upon. Revenge is something that people scorn. But grief is something that people can all understand. All people have. They put a movement in grief. So that when you have grief, you see, when someone dies in someone's house, no one, even if they're the enemies of the house, they do not oppose or they do not say anything about it. Or they make a joke about it. They won't, because it's grief. A environment of grief is something that people respect no matter what culture, what background they come from. It's a human thing. It's a human thing. Imagine with what wisdom they package this movement. And they send it forward so that it could not be taken away by those who wanted to oppress it. They took it away. And so this whole environment we have, really, this is something that Imam Khomeini had advised us to keep the majalis of Imam Hussain alive. One of the advices he gave to his followers is to keep this alive, because this is what is going to cause that movement to come out and express itself no matter where you're living. So, I'm saying that these majlises we have it here. And obviously they are being recorded on the internet and they are live, being live streamed into the homes of people. And those who are watching at home, this is for you. You know, it is the house, you're living in your house, right? You're living in your house. Imam Hussain was from the house of the Prophet. The Prophet's house is here. When you want to come and do and grieve for Imam Hussain, your job is to come to the house in which the death has taken place. And one of the things, this, what it creates is the sacrifice. This is what makes us sacrifice. Once we start taking Islam easy and making it easy on ourselves, you will see that slowly and slowly, everything will become self-service. I mean, I know one place they have where the people who used to come there for the alam, to make the yarat of the alam, used to come there for that. They had a hard time to get out of the car and go inside and do yarat there. So in order to make them happy, they put the alam outside so they can do it drive-through yarat. You know, so we don't want to go where Islam is, we want Islam to come where we are. You know, this is just an example I'm giving you, but you can see where it is going and you can apply it to all the places that it's applied to. And from there you understand that, you know, we need to understand that there are certain things that are important to keep them up, so that this sacrificing nature that these institute has created in us could be kept alive in the future. You see, there are different means of communication that are in place in the world. But you see, Imams were not allowed to go on the minbar. Mu'mineen were not allowed to go on the minbar or do anything like that. Even the Anbiya, you see, they were not given the pulpit to speak from. They weren't given the media of their time. They did not have it. And they were, on the other hand, mazloom, under the oppression of the oppressor, of the zalim. So now, what did they do? I want you to understand this. What did they do? That zulm that was happening on them, that situation of being mazloom and unjustly dealt with, or in jails, they were in jails, they turned the jails and they turned their mazloomiyat and their being oppressed into an institution and a ways to transfer the knowledge to the people. Really, my brother, understand this. What did they do? They changed the jail into their media. You see this. I want you to understand this. And this is everywhere you see how Islam is explaining this. And why it's explaining this to us. We see that in the situation of Prophet Yusuf. You know, Prophet Yusuf was being enticed to do haram. He was called to do haram. And he didn't want any part of it. He didn't want any part of it. So they sent him to jail. They sent him to jail. He had the option, either do this haram. And a lot of people will think, I'm going to go to jail just because of this one haram? Let me just do this. Why should I go to jail for? Imagine that. On one hand, you had disobedience to Allah, but it's only a one-night thing. That's it. On the other hand, you have years of jail. You have obedience to Allah, but years of jail with it. On one hand, you have disobedience to Allah, one night of problem, and after that, inshallah, I wake up in the morning and do istighfar. Right? I do istighfar. On the other hand, there is obedience to Allah, but years in jail. Now, Prophet Yusuf makes a decision. And Allah, he quotes his decision in the Quran. He says, Rabbi, أَسْتِجْنُ أَحَبُّ إِلَيَّ مِمَّا يَدْعُونَنِي إِلَيْهِ. He said, O Allah, the jail is more loved by me than what they are calling me towards. You see that? He is loving to go to jail. He wants to go to jail. He says, Allah, I would rather have the jail. I would rather go to jail than to disobey Allah. That's only one night of problem. But again, look at this. How Allah is trying to teach us. Prophet Yusuf wants that. He wants to go to jail. You know, now what happened? Is he worried? Is he anxious? Because a lot of times when you hear about jail, not even jail, if you see the sirens behind you, you know, right away, you know, like that. Yeah. We turn pale. What's going to happen to us? Alright? And let's say that you do go to jail for the right reason, meaning for standing for the truth. Let's say you go to a protest. You know, a lot of people don't go to protest. And whatever fear they have to deal with it. But those who are brave, those who are brave and they do go to a protest. And protest for whom? I mean, to protest against the zone that's happening on little children who are being blown to smithereens. Mothers who are watching their children die in front of them. They don't have a voice. You are just going up to give them a voice. To give them a voice, you're going out. So now, when you go out there, let's say you're arrested. For whatever reason, you know, they could arrest you for any reason. You know, when you go outside to protest, the cops can do anything. You know, something goes wrong, you see, you know, there'll be someone out there, you know, who'll do something wrong. And it goes wild, and they arrest you. Now, everyone is afraid that I'm going to have a record. My clean record is, I mean, look at this, broken, I mean, look at it. I had a clean record. Look at this part. What's all this madness? I should have done it. So they are so worried about keeping their record clean before the Zalim. And that record which is being destroyed before Allah, that record which is being destroyed before Allah, they have no fear of that. And here the Zalim, before him, we want to keep our record clean. For what? What are you going to do to us? Send us to jail? Then Allah is giving the example of Yusuf. Look at Yusuf and hear from him. What is he saying? Rabbi, asnishnu ahabbu ilayya mimma yadudani ilayhi. Allah, the jail is more sweeter to me. I love this jail than from what they are calling me to. Meaning, I would rather obey you and be in jail. I would rather keep my record clean in front of you and be in jail than to destroy a record with you and please those people. I would rather go to jail. Now what happens? He wasn't afraid. He wasn't worried. He wasn't worried at all. He was very calm. You see that? He went in. Allah gives the example of Ibrahim. You see, my brother, what happened, I'll tell you. When you make an intention to do something, right? You make an intention to do something. Let's say you have an enemy. You know, you have a neighbor that you hate. Right? He throws his garbage in your yard and you throw your garbage in his yard. Right? So now, if you make a plan to get at him, or whatever plan, I'm not saying anything, you just make a plan. If that plan works out, you're happy and satisfied. You know, and the plan is bad, obviously you want to do some harm to him. Right? You want to break his lights or whatever, you know, scratch his car. You know, you want to scratch his car, you know. Now, what happens is that if the plan works out, you're happy. If it doesn't work out, you see your bother. See, a zalim makes a plan. When his plan doesn't work out, he becomes bothered. He's worried. The mazloom is not worried. The zalim is worried. You see, Ibrahim is thrown into the fire. The Namrud and everyone are like, holding their hands together in glee. They want him to burn. They want him to cry when he's going in there. They want him to cry. They want him to get so worried and so, I mean, begging them, please let me go. But when they saw Ibrahim going toward the fire, Ibrahim was smiling. Ibrahim was smiling. Ibrahim being saved did not worry Namrud more than him smiling while this is happening. You see, to a zalim, he wants you to beg and get down and cry before him. When you don't do that, then the zalim is worried, not the mazloom. That zalim who has the tyrant and who's going to put you in jail, when you are calm, he's like, why are you calm? I should be the one calm. I'm giving you the punishment. You are calm. You see, understand this. So the first thing that happens when you go to jail, our advice is be calm. When you trust Allah, Allah is the judge. Allah is the judge. And when you believe in the justice of Allah, I explained to you yesterday, when you believe in the justice of Allah, then no matter what they do, it doesn't matter. Because what they are going to do, they will get in the hereafter. What you went through, you will get in the hereafter. But you believe in that, if you are going to jail, a mu'min is calm. When a mu'min is calm, this is what makes those people who want to punish a mu'min so worried that they lose their sleep. Ask, why is he calm? This itself, my brothers, from here we understand, the first thing that happens when you go to jail for the truth is that you worry the zalim. You make him worried, you make him anxious, you make him nervous now. Why is this happening? This is the first thing that happens. Now you see, when you go to jail, the next benefit of going to jail is, you see, when our Imam, Imam Musa al-Adham so he was sent to jail also. He was arrested and he was sent to jail. When he was sent to jail, now you see his statement. And he gave another wisdom, a completely different one. And I want you to see this, completely different one. When he went to jail, he said to Allah, that Allah, I thank you. Now you have given me the opportunity and time I was looking to worship. You see, when I was outside the jail, I had responsibilities. I had wife and children at home. I have all these other things, my bills and all these things I have to worry about. So I have to work, I have to do things. But now they put me in jail. Now I don't have those responsibilities. You see, when you go to jail, the second thing that happens is that Allah takes those responsibilities away from you. You are not responsible for them anymore. So when a woman goes to jail, now he does not think about his wife or his children. Why? Because even if he does, what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do? You're in jail. So that's what the Imam is saying. He said, until now I had responsibilities. Now you took away those responsibilities so I can freely make ibadah to you. I can freely do ibadah to you. Why? This is happening because you go to jail. Understand this? My brother, how Islam is teaching this? How our Imams have shown and the Prophets have shown that you change the turn. This is the second thing. You know? And then when you come forward, you will see more. Jail is a unique place because of two things. Jail is a unique place because of two things. First thing is that everyone in there is a convicted criminal. So they need more guidance than others. I mean, outside, whether you are a criminal or not, it's not known. See, not known. You may be a criminal who's not convicted yet. Right? But in jail, everyone is a convicted criminal. That's the way jails are. All of them, they went there because they're convicted. So they are in more need of guidance. And the second unique thing is that, you know, outside of jail, you know, we want to teach people, we have to run after them. You see, we have to run after them and we say that, here brother, come here, let me teach you a hadith. You say, Maulana, you know, inshallah, next week I have time, I'll give you an appointment. Or to give you a class, I just learned something, or to give you a class. He said, Maulana, inshallah, next week. Right, you take your appointment book out and say, you know, I'm not free till 3 weeks, inshallah, I'll write you down. Right, you inshallah, call me. Right? This is what happens. And so now what happens, outside of jail, this is the situation, in jail, you don't have to go after the people. They'll come to you and say, so, why are you here? people, they have nothing else to do. They have nothing else to do, so they want to hear what you have to say. You see, they want to hear what you have. They have time to listen. They have time to listen to you. So now, the third thing that you go in jail for, this is the best place for you as a mu'min to do the tabligh of your iman. You see that? When Yusuf went inside there, when Yusuf went to jail, they were having discussion with the inmates. You know, with the inmates they were having a discussion. And the inmates were saying, you know, so, who's your God? They asked Yusuf. And Yusuf said, I have only one God. There's only one God. And they were like looking at him and saying, you know, that's sad. They said, we have many gods. They said, we have many gods. You see that? Yeah, they felt sad for him. In those days, that was a mentality. Right? In some places of the world, you will see it's still the mentality. You know, I have witnessed it myself. You know, I was in a bus. This was in India. In a bus, I was a high school student. Someone asked me, you know, you're a Muslim and this and that, you know. And he said, you know, we have 6 million gods. And I only have one. You only have one God. Oh. You know. Yeah, I'll give you some more gods. You need to take them back. You know. And then this Yusuf, you see, the Yusuf in the same way, these people are looking at him and saying, what, only one God? Then now, see, their reasoning wasn't there yet. They couldn't understand this. How can you only worship one God? Our religion has many of them. You see, they couldn't understand that. Now Yusuf tells them, listen, I just want to ask you a question. Is one strong God better or many weaker gods? You know, they're like, what do you mean by that? He says, all the gods that you have, you make them. And the one God that I worship made everyone else. So now which one do you want to worship? Now they started thinking. They started thinking. They said, you're right. That one God is better than all this. See, what was he doing there? We are in jail. They have nothing else to do. They have no wife or children or other responsibilities. They want to talk to you. So this is the best place for you to do tabligh. To propagate Islam. To give the message of Islam to the people. This is the third thing, my brothers. And the fourth thing that happens, when you are mazloom and you are put in jail or any of these places, when that zalim, the reason he is putting you in isolation, you see, understand this. Imam Musa Khazim is in jail. In the example of Yusuf, you know, in jail there are obviously, you need to know, jails are divided into two parts. One, you're with the public, one, you're in isolation. It's called solitary confinement. You're all alone. Prophet Yusuf's example is that he is amongst the public. And the seventh Imam's example is that he is in isolation. And that's the reason, you see, because they were in different environments, they did different things. Prophet Yusuf was propagating the message of Allah. And because our Imam was in isolation, he did not have the chance to propagate Islam, so he was worshipping Allah. You see, every responsibility has a place. But now you see, we need to understand this one thing, and then you will know what this last thing is. What is the advantage of going to jail? Why do you want to go? What happens when you go to jail? What is the message that is being given? Hazrat Musa, you see that our Imam Musa al-Qasim, he is in jail, in isolation. He is one person. He has no army. He has no big wealth. He has no, like for example, huge people behind him with arms. Nothing. And who's putting him there? Harun Rashid. Harun Rashid is the emperor of Islam. By Islam, his kingdom. He is the emperor. His kingdom spans from India all the way to Morocco. The largest empire the world has ever seen. The largest empire. Roman Empire is not even close to how big his empire was at his age. In his time. It was so big. That big an emperor. Look at it. That big an emperor. With all this army. With all these things. You see. With all of these. Now I want you to recognize how big it was. You know. It is said about Harun Rashid. A cloud was passing by. A cloud was passing by over his head. You know, he was in this palace. He looked at the cloud and he said, rain. Cloud's not going to listen to him. He says, rain. And everyone's laughing at him and he's telling the cloud to rain. It didn't rain. Anyway, it didn't rain. The cloud went by. But he laughed at the cloud. He says, no matter where you're going to pour your rain, it will get my land. This is how big my land is. You see, that pride is because of how big it is. It's not just 1-2 acre house that we have. No, it's a huge part of the world. So now, with that huge army, and that huge empire, and all these huge things that he has, why is it that he is putting our Imam in jail and in isolation so that he doesn't meet anyone? My brothers and sisters, first thing, this is the last thing I'm saying. You see what happens when a zalim puts you in jail, he's declaring that he is weak and you are strong. With all that army I have, I cannot do anything to you. I have to put you in jail because if you are outside, I'm afraid of you. So Islam is saying, do not be afraid to go to jail for standing up for Islam. When you're standing up for Islam, do not be afraid to go to jail. Because one, by going to jail, the zalim is worried. And by heading to jail and being in jail, you have the chance to do ibadat. Or you have the chance to do tabligh. And if not that, then all it's showing is that you are strong and the zalim is weak. You see that? This is the message. This is how you get the message across. Zulm, when you become mazlum, mazlumiyyah helps you take this message. Ahlul Bayt, you see, they were mazlum and in the zulm and the injustice that was happening to them, but they used the injustice they were in to make it a means of getting the message of truth to where it should reach. Understand this, my brothers and sisters, what is going on? You see, when we looked at it, Karbala, there was zulm done there. There was a message there. There was a mission there. And there was zulm on the other side that was done to it. Now this mission of Imam Hussein was apparently crushed. The message of Imam Hussein was apparently crushed. This message needed to be taken and given to the Muslim world. What was the best place to give it? Where all the Muslim leaders will come together. But that was in Sham. See, that was in Sham. How do you get this message from Karbala to Sham? Now you understand, Imam Sajjad accepted the neck brace and the chains so that by this means he will get this message and go to Sham and give it there. He took the message of that message which was apparently trampled in Karbala. You see, he accepted the zulm. So that this message, it was the only point for Hattarisha. If he had stood strong and if he had started to fight, he would have been killed. That message would never have reached out. He accepted the fact that he would go through all this hardship so that this message can reach out. So that that message can be given where it is supposed to be given. You see how they use their malumiyat to make it a means of giving this message there. Zainab, she was willing to give her rida and give her hijab. She was willing to do that in order to get this message and give it to the court of Sham. My brothers and sisters, this is how the message reached Sham. They took this message by this means, and this was the means. They were mazloom, but they used that mazloomiyyah to make it a means of communicating the truth to where it should be done. They made it their own media. This is their wisdom, this is that insight they had. It was easy for them to die right there. Shimmer would be glad to kill them all. But you see, they bore the shame that they had to go through. Because they wanted to make sure that this voice they kept so that it could be said, the same message could be said in the court of Israel. When you see this, this is my friends. This is that Messiah that we cry for. These are the hardships that we cry for. And truly, when you see what has been going on since the time they left Karbala. This is the land they left Karbala. They were, the ladies were tied together. Imam Sajjad, in Sham-e-Ghareeba, he was sick. He was very ill. But it was in the early morning, right before the time for prayer, that's when his health came back. His health came back at that time and he was able to stand up. He was able to stand up. And right away when he had the ability to stand up, the first thing he did was pray to Allah. First thing he did was pray to Allah, and they said that he made fajr. And then he went into sajda and he did not come out of sajda. Whatever was said there, I do not know. But truly, he was grabbed by the soldiers who had come. The order had come to get all the people with Imam Hussein as captains. Bring them there. Imam Sajjad was taken. And his feet were tied in chains. His hands were tied. And Imam Sajjad, you see, there was a neck brace that was put on him. A neck brace that was made of wood, it was heavy. And so it was heavy, it would stay on his neck so it would slide off. So in order to keep it up on the neck, they drove in nails into his neck. They drove the nails into his neck so that the nails would go inside and hold up that neck brace. Now imagine with that, Imam Sajjad is still, he is just getting over his sickness, he is still ill. They would make him walk. They would make him walk with that, and you see that every few steps that he takes, he is ill and he would trip over and fall down. They would trip over and fall down and they would come right away and start whipping him in the back until he gets up. They will whip him in the back with a whip until he gets up and start walking. Imam Sajjad would walk again and fall down again, and again they would whip him. And they would do this until they said they'll do more than that. Now they lay down thorns. They would lay down thorns in his way so he will walk over the thorns. He will walk over the thorns, you see, in the pain that he is in. Still he wanted to do this because he knew that this message must reach Sham. This message should reach the court of Yazid. He will go through whatever it takes. My friends, no one in history has gone through the pain that Imam Sajjad has gone through. Even with all of that, you see, even with all these hardships that he's going through, and you see, a point came when the people who they were traveling with recognized that there was a connection and a relationship between him and Sakina. You see, this is one other sister who shared a very strange relationship throughout the journey of Karbala. Sakina had lost everyone, Imam Sajjad had lost everyone. They had one another, but they could not comfort one another, they could not console one another. And you see that every time Imam Sajjad was wept, it was Sakina whose tears would fall from her eyes. And she would look at her poor brother being gripped by these enemies, and her whole body would shake of pain. When she used to see that of Imam Sajjad, you see, that Imam Sajjad also would look towards his sister, cannot say anything to her, cannot tell her, my sister, I'm here with you, cannot console her, cannot comfort her, cannot do anything for her. He felt sad, but soon they realized that she is the sister of Imam Sajjad. Now you know what they did. Imam Sajjad would be so tired, and he would be in so much pain, when he would trip over now and fall down, now they wouldn't come to him. They would go to Sakina and start slapping Sakina in the face until Imam Sajjad doesn't get up. Imam Sajjad would make himself get up so that Sakina is not pushing for. You know, this relationship used to go on. And there used to be these stops they used to make at night. Every night when the caravan stopped, these ladies would be put in one place. Imam Sajjad would be put there right next to them. And then these people would go away and they would make their own camp. At night when everyone used to go to sleep, Sakina used to wait there. Crying and sobbing, she used to wait there. And she would wait there until everyone has gone to sleep. And it is said that she would crawl on her knees and her elbows. She would crawl between the ladies until she would reach Imam Sajjad. She would take the feet of Imam Sajjad, put them on her little lap, and one by one she would pull out the thorns that are in his feet. She would pull the thorns out and she would wash his feet with her tears. And she would look to Imam Sajjad and said, brother, when are we going back? When are we going to go away from these tragedies? Imam Sajjad said, patience, my daughter, patience, my sister. A time will come when everything will be alright. Patience. One day, one night when Sakina began to cry loud, she began to cry louder. The soldiers heard this. They came to see what's going on. And they saw that Sakina is helping Imam Sajjad. They came from behind and took a whip and hit Sakina in the back. And Sakina gave a shriek and she shouted out, my brother, help me. Imam Sajjad looked at them and said, do not hurt my sister. Hurt me inside. Come, help me and whip me. I'm ready to take the whip from my sister. Imam Sajjad went through so much hardship in order to get this message, in order to get this message and mission of Imam Hussein to where people can hear it, to where the world can hear it, and where it will make sense. But you see, how much hardships he went through. There was no other hardship that he went through than the fact that he had to walk with all these things, and he had to walk with Zainab and Umm Kulthum in front of him, and them not having anything on their hair. This was something that was a tragedy for Imam Sajjad. Imam Sajjad was feeling this tragedy in his heart. He could not bear to see this. This was so hard on him. That's why the injury that happened to his neck lasted for many years, and the pain from it lasted for many years also. When Imam Sajjad came back, you see, when he met Muhammad Hanafiya, and Muhammad Hanafiya didn't recognize him, he came to hug his nephew. Imam Sajjad said, leave my uncle, leave me alone. He said, Why is it my son? Don't you like me anymore? He said, no. You see, the neck brace that was put on my neck, there were nails driven through it. And he until now, even until now, I'm hurting from it. I'm hurting from it. And when he heard that, he said, but you have gone old. You have become old. Why did that happen to you? Imam Sajjad didn't become old because of the neck brace, nor the chain. Imam Sajjad did not become wrinkled because of the neck brace or this. Imam Sajjad did not become bent because of any of these things. He did not age because of these things. You know why Imam Sajjad aged? When Muhammad Hanifi asked him, how did you become so old? Imam Sajjad did not say, it's because of the neck brace or the chain or the whipping or any of these things. He said, Asham has made me old. Sham has made me wrinkles.
Ya Allah, ya Allah, ya Father, ya Allah, Allah, give us the topic and the blessing in the right path. Even those who can stay in that place. It's to be a place of reward. Make us his help when he comes. O Allah, accept this small ibadah of ours. O Allah, give the reward of his ibadah to those who are sponsored to be. O Allah, all the Muslims who are in hardships throughout the world, Allah, you help them and you give them your help. O Allah, our leaders that are above us, and the leader of our family, please, you keep him safe and keep his shade over
us.
O Allah, help us to be firm on the path of Ahlul Bayt. Give the love of Ahlul Bayt in the hearts of our children. And make us such that we can be the helpers of the Iman.